evening and welcome to all. My name is Anzara, and I'm the host of this program, 1 Hour with Anzara. The views expressed on this broadcast are not intended to replace, diagnose, treat, give psychiatric advice, or replace appropriate professional intervention. My goal is to express what I would do if I was in your situation. After much research and many years of experience in personal application, I consult with clients and teach a variety of methods and spiritual modalities to accomplish the living and uplifting of life. There is rarely a time that I recommend a course of action that I myself have not used successfully to accomplish my own goals and dreams. And tonight, we're a little on a different line tonight. Tonight, our topic is fundamentalism as a cult in America. And I wish to say that, again, I ask all of you, open your eyes, open your ears, open your mind. The truth is not fragile, and neither is God. We can, as the people, the children of this planet, fearlessly examine ideas. We want to know the truth. We want to teach the truth and live the truth. If something is not the truth, we want to find out about it, and we want to let it go. The truth will stand up under any light, no matter how bright, and God does not fall apart if we question. And this is very, very important because there are so many people out there right now who are questioning where they're coming from, where they're going, and what their basic fundamentalist religion is teaching them. They're questioning. They have doubts. This doesn't seem logical. This doesn't seem within my experience, my spiritual experience, my physical experience on this planet. This does not coincide with how God has revealed himself or herself to me. And in actuality, what is truth? There are so many levels of truth. Truth is kind of like an onion. There's one level and another level. You peel off another level until you get to the very essence and the center. And in most of our lifetimes, we don't reach that epicenter. But we can begin in reaching that very easily. I'd like to begin tonight by saying that this show that I'm doing, Fundamentalism as a Cult in America, is not intended to malign anyone or their spiritual beliefs, and it certainly isn't my intention to step on any toes, although I'm sure that I inadvertently may do so. But I'd like you all to know that I have experienced in my life being a fundamentalist myself. I had 8 years within a fundamentalist religion. I always say, well, I had to do my time. And I had to do my time so that I could come out a little wiser and possibly, in some way, help other people. And the times that I have spoken in the past, when I had worked psychic lines in the past, I spoke to numerous pastors calling in the middle of the night with very, very heavy questions that they weren't finding an answer to in the religion that they practiced and taught. But I always view that my background in that particular religion was very helpful in helping them. So therefore, nothing is wasted. And today, I attend frequently a charismatic church. So I have nothing against churches, per se. But I have a problem with when things turn into a cult. Like I say, I attend a charismatic church, a wonderful church, but the pastor there does not preach hellfire and brimstone. He teaches a Christ-centered message of how you can live your life in a successful and uplifted manner, and by following the true precepts of Christ, or in my opinion, the other avatars and teachers also, you can have a pretty good life. It goes to follow when you uplift yourself spiritually, which when I attend this church, I find myself uplifted. I appreciate the altered state of consciousness. So, I'd like to start tonight by, why do churches teach what they teach? People and churches have believed in the past a lot of distortions that were added from history, or for political reasons, or to appease this or that leader, or make this or that point. People have seen the theological positions change right in front of their eyes. Various evangelists trying to make their point. In fact, on any Sunday, and probably any other day, there's enough points of view presented on television alone that an unbiased observer would probably conclude that these preachers were not speaking of the same Bible or the same Jesus. Many times we find mongers of hate and guilt, fear, separation, and all manners of ugliness. And that's not what the Savior of the world was trying to profess. Most of these people are good people. Most of them are simply misguided or ignorant or some suggestible. A few of them, though, are basically outright opportunists using the negative mental state they put in people so that they can reap power and big bucks. Instead of helping save us, they confuse us. They control us, they want our money, they want our power, and above all, they want to be considered right. These people fear people who teach love and forgiveness, joining, oneness, self-responsibility, introspection, not permitted, awakening and brotherhood, unless these things are taught in their acceptable manner. They must be encased within a teaching of fear, judgment, and separation. And people, they have an investment in all of us staying in the trance. Believe me. And those of us who have escaped the trance at some level or another, we find that, it looks like a cult. It really looks like a cult, what we were involved in. Well, what is a cult? According to Webster, a cult is a system, of religious worship with reference to its rites and ceremonies. A sect of believers who adhere to a common ideology, doctrine, or leader, especially when such adherence or devotion is based on fanatical beliefs or dogma, an insistence of a fixed almost religious veneration for a person, a thing, by a body of admirers. Well, tonight's topic does focus on fundamentalism as a cult. Are all Christians involved in a cult? No, absolutely not. You may want to ask yourself if the system to which you adhere is a closed club of fellow believers. Can you say that you're encouraged to question the leaders and the other members? Can you disagree with the belief that doesn't line up as with your own personal experience or insight? Are you allowed free dialogue with others and the leaders without being told that you're under the evil influence and others surrounding you, throwing biblical quotes at you, interrupting you, and not allowing you to finish a thought? Inquiry or questions, those can be regarded as sins. Some groups in the know have all the answers. Adherents may draw away from you, averting their eyes and spouting fanatic prayers, trying to cast out the evil spirit of Satan from you and away from them, lest they be contaminated, if you've noticed that. One red flag that could show up screaming cult is ostracization. If you don't stop asking Satan-inspired questions and just follow the precepts, you will be outside in the cold. Of course, they'll pray for you, but until you buckle under, you are kept at arm's length. Please notice that folks in this type of religion often talk fast. They talk loudly, trying to use their concept of scriptures taken totally out of context. Often they have a feverish or a glazed look in their eyes. Folks like these are not evil people, though. They are not evil people. They are good people. These good people basically are entranced under a trance, often generational. They have learned precepts from their parents on down through the generations. And these people mean well. They truly believe what they are saying to you. Many or most genuine pastors often fall into this category. They're good folks under a negative hypnosis. And I would like to interject here also that I have always been kind to Jehovah's Witnesses who come to my door, because these people are out there in the heat, in the cold, believing what they are doing is right. Are they under a trance? In my opinion, absolutely. Yes, they are. Are they misinformed? In my opinion, yes, they are. To my understanding, to my truth, they are. But they are fellow human beings with a soul. And they are people struggling on this planet to make a difference. It doesn't agree with mine, but it doesn't give any of us a right to be cruel or unkind in any way to them. And that goes for anyone of any religion, that when people approach you, always try and be very, very kind, because they believe in what they're doing. You don't have to buy it. You don't have to do it. But God forbid that we be rude. That's very important. These people are under a negative hypnosis, and I really wish that my co-host and my partner was with me tonight. Unfortunately, he could not be, but he's the hypnotherapist, and he has so much to say on this, and he was so disappointed he couldn't be here. But I'm going to carry through with this. When the trance that these people are under is threatened, some interesting, very interesting physiological changes can begin to take place. Number one, the heartbeat begins to accelerate, and sometimes a slight dizziness can be felt. The body temperature can begin to raise slightly, and perspiration can be seen on the forehead and upper lip, often along with a sweatiness, clamminess in the palms. The voice can either tremble or it can go into a sing-song tone. The body itself can begin to sway forward and back to the cadence of the words. If you think right now that you might be involved in a cult or someone that you care about may be involved in a cult, you may want to ask yourself some of the following questions that I have taken from a survey about cults. And if you'd like, get a paper and pencil and write down these that seem to apply to you or maybe will apply to someone else. And by the way, we invite callers to call in 877-270-8714. I'd love to hear from you. Even if you don't agree with me, I'd love to hear from you. Changing my notes around here. Number one, does my group require me to think like them? Do I find myself frequently checking myself out to see if they would approve? I found myself in this position a lot because I was always at loggerheads and odds. I didn't seem to agree with a lot of the teachings, but I had to do my time there. But when we're honest with ourselves, hey, it can be an amazing exercise. And when we truly look honestly at the groups that we join, we'll find there's a lot of behaviors that are expected and considered to be normal for that group. When these are considered normal by a large portion of other people, then we can feel at ease with them, such as you're to wear clothes in public, you're not to steal, lie, cheat, you're to consider the feelings of others. But what about abnormal or unusual requirements that you have to do, such as you don't go to the movies? But do you feel that the movies for you is a sin? Does everybody else get to wear pants, blue jeans, designer blue jeans, but you have to wear something different, some type of specialized costume? Do most people get to go out alone, but people in your group always have to have someone from their group with them? And you might answer or ask yourself a question, what would happen if I told the leader or the pastor that I believe differently than he or she did on a certain point, on a certain teaching? Would you be allowed to do this? Or would the campaign begin to bring you back into the fold of the acceptable one? Is your identity in any way held in this group? Do you feel uncomfortable doing what you feel is normal when it goes against what the group teaches is normal? That's a pretty big example. And another example might be that your group teaches that all alcohol is sinful. But what about if you were raised in a home where, or a country where drinking wine was perfectly normal and you like wine and you continue to serve it? Are you feeling guilty? Would you hide that wine bottle if the leader was to drop by? Do you wonder if the other people in the group would accept you if they knew what you were really like? If they knew you served wine at dinner, or, God forbid, smoked a cigarette or played a game of cards, or went dancing? Do you expect or spend, any large amount of time wondering about if you're in line with the policy? And are you struggling to become in line of the policy? Is your life so tied up in this group that you wouldn't even think of doing anything opposed to their teachings? Well, if you answer yes, you may want to ask yourself, is this serving me? Is this helping me grow closer to the prime creator, to the God, my personal creator? And number two of this survey, does my group try to scare me with fear of anyone or anything? Fear is a powerful force of control, definitely. Does your group or your church try to frighten you into doing what they want you to do? Into believing what they want you to believe? Do they shove ideas at you of eternal damnation or heinous punishments here or in the next life, expulsion from the group or harm to the family members or any other things that create fear in your heart? I remember that when I was in this particular state of mind, I saw a movie that was shown at the church on the end times, and it was about a husband and wife who were separated because the husband refused to become a Christian by their standards, and she was taken and he wasn't, and the whole story was around what would happen. And it had me so totally torn up. It was truly a devastating emotional experience. And I, to this day, do not see how God can operate with fear. Remember, God is love. Perfect love casts out fear. Fearful things cannot be of God. It's not a good thing to give your life over to ungodliness, uncleanliness, but wouldn't it be better to serve the God of love rather than a theology created from fear? Question three. Does my group try to control me with guilt in any way? Well, are you blamed for the fall of man, for the start of the war, for the crucifixion, for anything that went on in the past that you have no control over? Are you supposed to make amends for others' mistakes? Are you supposed to suffer for your mistakes way beyond the consequences of the mistake itself? Are you asked by others to be responsible for the eternal lives of yourself, but also everyone all over the world? Is it made clear to you that because you're a sinner, your lack of trying to help spread the word or other reasons that you are guilty of something and should ask forgiveness? Do you feel in any way that you have to pay for your guilt, either in this life through service or money, or in the next life? Do the preachers and teachers tell you that you can, relieve you of your guilt and threats of punishment if you'll do just what they say? Do they hammer at you on the point that we're all sinners and have done something indefinable, something that has separated us from God? do they indicate that you are unworthy? And the pastor that where I go has always had a problem with us hearing people, other preachers on the radio stating, we are nothing but bags of manure, unworthy worms. This is not what God has created us. Are you a worm in the dust? Do they ever suggest that somebody had to be murdered 2,000 years ago to save you from your unworthiness? Do they get you? Do they get you to undermine your self-esteem through these unworthiness themes? This isn't God, ladies and gentlemen. Do they give you leaders? Do the leaders, my handwriting for my notes tonight, do the leaders give you a lot of ridiculous things to do when they build unworthiness in you? Do they tell you that you have to eat or drink strange things to be made okay? Do they fill your mind with morbid pictures and control you as a result? This is a problem. My son went to a church with some neighbors once, and they were showing them films and strange things that would happen to children who were not in alignment. And in fact, they showed a picture in an amusement park of a huge devil. This was in a Christian amusement park, that when you went into this, you were shot out the rear end of the devil. And my son was highly offended at this. And, of course, he began, I don't believe in the devil. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in hell. He used to say, my mom tells me there is no hell like this. That's not hell. We make our hell. God loves us, and God would not send us to hell. Well, ask yourself a question. Does it serve you right now to believe that God condemned you and that this group that you're in can bring you to salvation? Does it serve you to follow some type of barbaric ritual and pretend that these rituals have a lot of power? Rituals, interesting. We'll talk in the future on some rituals that really have a lot of power down through history. Very interesting. You know, going back into the Bible, you can think about Jesus. And there was this woman that was going to be stoned. And Jesus came up and he told the, they questioned him. And he said, well, let's see. Which of you that is without sin, let him cast the first stone. And he stooped and began writing into the dirt all of their sins. And they went away, and they didn't stone the woman. And he helped the woman up, and he said, go and sin no more. Sin meaning, from the Greek, missing the mark. Don't miss the mark anymore. Do what is correct, that you know is correct within your soul. Christ was merciful. Does my group have a leader who's the only one who knows what the real truth is? And several years ago, I went to, as a guest, to a church, and they had this list in a frame about the things that you had to do to be saved in their church. And one thing is that you were to believe the pastor's interpretation because he is the one that knew the pastor's interpretation of the Bible. Very interesting church. I went there because my clients were there, some of them. I was a hairdresser, and they all had long hair and wore long hair. You know how that is. And I went as a courtesy to my clients. My gosh, my ears hurt a lot. And I could not believe that there was so much darkness because there was no joy, only hellfire and darkness taught. Do they imply that you're not qualified to figure out your own answers, to read the books? You can't understand it? Is there someone outside of yourself who's the final authority who speaks to God that you can't? Are you willing to be a sheep, a sheeple, and follow along without exploring all of this on your own? Does it serve you to accept what this leader says without examining it? Since God is intelligence, wouldn't that intelligence want you to use intelligence and think for yourself? Since you're one with God, wouldn't you have intelligence within you too, if we are made in the image and likeness of God? Have we not the intelligence of God within us? And number five, does my group discourage questioning the teachings? Do you find that if you question, you or other people around you are ridiculed, you're insulted, you're ignored by the members of the group? What group can hold teachings so high and so special that you can't examine them? Does your group communicate in any way that it might even be sinful or dangerous to challenge these teachings? Do you feel that you cannot freely ask questions to members or leaders of the group? Do you feel that if you question anything, it would have to be in secret, and even then it might not be a good idea? Does it serve you or the group not to question? What would be the fruit of your questioning? If you knew something were the truth, wouldn't it bother you? Or would it bother you, actually, if someone questioned it or explored it? Remember, truth isn't fragile. Wouldn't you know that they would find out the truth and you don't have to protect it? If what you were examining was a lie, wouldn't you know that you had to protect it because if it were examined, it would be discovered to be a lie? What purpose does it serve to protect and to defend anything, these teachings? Is the truth or a lie served by hiding and protecting it? Ask yourself that question. What is served? Observe the process. Does my group discourage unbiased inquiry into other systems or other religions? Well, are you encouraged to stay within the approved list, the tapes and the lectures of your group? What are you being protected from? Does your group provide reading about other groups that's only from their point of view? Do they slant everything to their point of view? Interesting. The Catholic Church used to have a list of approved movies and list of banned movies. And believe me, every person I knew would get that list of banned movies, and that's the first thing that they would want to see were the banned movies. It's just human nature. Does your group point, slant everything to prove their point? What would happen, basically, if you started studying all the other religions of the world? You might find out, like I did, but don't take my word for it, folks. Check it out for yourself. They all teach the same thing. So separation is gone. Exclusiveness is gone. Control is gone. The major religions teach one God, love, precepts of the Ten Commandments, the law of sowing and reaping, eternal life, and other such standard beliefs. Somebody lays dogma on top of all the lovely teachings, and people get divided. Does it serve you to take anyone's word for something this important without an impartial study for yourself? There are thousands of libraries all over this country, and they can offer you a large array of books about religions and philosophies. The truth is not fragile, ladies and gentlemen. And God is not fragile, and neither are you. Made in the image and likeness of God and the intelligence of God, you are encouraged to open your eyes, to look at religion with a new eye, and see it for yourself, like free from other people's opinions. Find out what your spiritual nature is and how that nature is interpreted through the different religions of the world. And number 7, does my group have special rites and ceremonies that are necessary for salvation, quote unquote? Well, there's communion, which there's nothing wrong with it at all. It's a tradition. And sometimes baptism, and that also is a tradition. It only becomes harmful when people are told that if you are not baptized, you can't go to heaven. And even little babies can't go to heaven. If they die without this rite, they're going to be kept apart from their Father, God. What about the original teachings? They're being lost sight of. Definitely being lost sight of. God is love, and he who abides in love abides in God, and God in him. Number 8, does my group adhere strictly to a common belief system? And is it made clear to you there are acceptable and unacceptable ways to believe? Is it made clear to you that it's already been determined what to believe? Is it made clear to you that it's either dumb or foolish or sinful or above all to believe in any other way? Does this belief system differentiate you from other groups so that you feel superior to others, separate from others, and are safe only within your own group? Does it serve you to exclude the possibility that God reveals himself in many ways, times, places, and people? Could your life be enriched by incorporating a larger belief system into your life? Is God so small that he would box us in? Is the creator of all so small and so small-hearted that he would condemn someone to eternal damnation because they viewed him from a different angle? That does not make sense. Many people are driven away from Christianity because they do not believe in hell. And the thought is this. If I am a mother and I would never condemn my child to an eternal, without end punishment, how then can my Creator, the God of the universe and the Creator of all men, condemn any of his children to an eternal place of torment and away from himness? Does that make sense? Does it really serve us to exclude the possibility that God reveals many ways, times, and places himself to other people. What about letting a larger belief system in your life? You know, when you really look at it, the fundamentalists in every religion always teach that their way is the only way, and all those that do not believe that way will definitely go to hell for eternity. And this is in many fundamentalist religions, including Islam. The fundamentalists in Islam believe that the infidels will suffer eternally. Who is right? Who is right? I ask again, who is right? Are we right? Are they right? Do all the Muslims go to hell? Or do all the Christians go to hell? Or Catholics? Or Jews? Gee, what a lonely place heaven must be if all of these other people except our group goes to hell. Does your group have doctrines that are not to be questioned by anyone, including its leaders? Are there inviolate teachings that can't be challenged? You cannot discuss them objectively, or they can't be changed? And is the pastor or the leader of the group also held in captivity by these teachings? Did the teacher himself, to get to that position, have to accept this 100%? Does my group have an authoritarian leader who's clearly in charge of the group and keeping its teachings? Does this group have a leader that's an authoritarian type, stands up high up on that pulpit above everyone else, wears special clothes, uses special language and a tone of voice to tell you who's in charge? Does the leader have a title that is venerated? Does the leader try to appear better or different from the congregation? And ladies and gentlemen, do they have absolute control? Can this person hold sway over your whole life according to this group's rule? Do they have a divine mission to protect the teachings and keep them pure? Is there anyone so developed on this planet that you would trust everything they say, do, or whatever as being totally and pure of God? I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, do not trust everything I say by far. I'm extremely human. Check it out for yourself. Could it be possible in the remote corner of the remotest part of the universe that we're all in the process and God is not finished with us yet? Is it ever the end of the story? If God is eternal, then the story is eternal. It goes on and on and on. It does not stop. Dimension upon dimensions are being discovered by science every single day. Dimension upon dimension. How can we box the very prime creator into such a tiny thing? How can we box ourselves and lock ourselves into such a box? Question 11, does my group have a religious veneration for any type of person? And 12, does my group have a veneration for an object or a group of objects? Does the church or group suggest you must worship a person? Like some guru or... In many religions, you have to worship one of the developers of that faith. That's often found in some of the Middle Eastern faiths, this type of thing. Does your group's suggest that there's a substitute for God, that somebody is as important as God? Does your group replace real spiritual experience with some type of formalized and ritual worship and objects? Do you kiss, kneel, adore, protect, love any particular objects? A statue, a cross, a picture? Are they the ones that have the spiritual power? I made the choice myself not to put my faith in a lot of outside things, in things that can rot and rust and disintegrate. But the faith is the faith of God within me. That is my faith. I put a trust in my Creator. God is not the judge. He's not an artifact. He's not any of these things. God is spirit. And they that worship Him must worship Him in spirit. And is there any limit to the spirit? No, there is none. Number 13, does my group teach that we're the in-group and others in other groups are not as good, will not be blessed, and they're going to suffer and go to hell? Well, does your group appeal to that need to belong? Do they suggest that by belonging to the group, you're special? And perhaps you can control a bit of that unworthiness you have, and that you can stop being a hopeless sinner if you join with them? Do they tell you to bring other people into that fold no matter what way is necessary? Do they want you to act very desperate, acting like all is fair in love and war? Do you get to allay your inferiority feelings by looking at others in other groups and feeling superior to them because they aren't saved or they aren't converted? Going back one more time, does it serve you to believe in a God that would harm His own creation? Would you destroy one of your own children if they disagreed with you? Are you better than God? Number 14, does my group teach that ours is the only way? Could we be called fanatical by some? Number 15, does my group in any way imply that we're the only ones who know the truth? Does my group imply that we have the knowledge and all revelation, that God has given us the final word or words, and that our interpretation of sacred writings is the only correct interpretation? When you find yourself thinking this way, it's possible that those who are terrorists in our society, they have a habit of thinking that way, that their interpretation of their scriptures is the only way. Remember that. Does the group indicate that God is no longer revealing Himself, that revelation's over? He only reveals Himself to leaders and the leaders of that particular group, and those leaders are the only ones privy to the scoop of what the scriptures really are about. Does your group limit God to themselves, teaching that others are mistaken or deliberately misleading people from the true teaching? Do the leaders of your group give you a lot of folderol and a lot of explanations that puzzle you or confuse you concerning the contradictions in the Bible and the references to very unholy behavior such as, incest, rape, pillage, plunder, murder? reminds me of a story. One of my past guests, Dr. Jessica Worth, was telling a story that she asked one of her professors a question, and the question was about some issue in the Bible that was quite contradictory, and the pastor's answer to her, the professor's answer rather, was, why don't we just let sleeping dogs lie? Does it serve you to give power to situations like this? Can one person or one group understand all the scriptures? What about the things they took out during the Council of Trent, the Council of Nicaea? What about the things that they deleted over the years through the different translations? What about all of that? What about different cultures and different languages? Who knows who wrote the Bible? When it was written, why they wrote it, why certain things were added and other things deleted? There's whole books that have been taken out of the Bible. Oh, well, gee, that doesn't go with what we believe, so, oh, well, roll it up, put some poison on the edge of the pages and stuff it in the vaults in the Vatican. How did the Bible get into its present form? What version do you read? How do you know which is the most accurate translation? What particular scrolls did these people use? Why did they use these scrolls and not all of them? Where are the original scrolls? Well, according to my understanding, they're all in the vaults of the Vatican. How come you can't know God in a way that... the way that he allows you to know him for yourself? What if, good Lord, what if all the Bibles disappeared? What if all the theology disappeared? Would God disappear too? Could you still know God? Does dogma stand in the way of your God experience? Do you let dogma take the place as a substitute for God himself? Number 16, does my group prohibit certain behavior that's practiced freely by others? Oh, boy. Well, I guess you don't get to go dancing and see that new movie. How about health practices that are considered helpful, but your religion won't allow it? Do you have to miss your favorite entertainer who's in town because you can't go to a nightclub? Do you have to refrain from doing things in no way harm anyone, but are prohibited by your group? Do you allow your behavior to be controlled this way? And let me ask you, does it serve you to be controlled without thinking it through? What would happen if you did whatever it is? Think it through now. What would really happen? First, on this plane of existence, what would happen? What are the results of this behavior? Well, your group might threaten you with afterlife retribution, but then that's only a fantasy. God loves you. He's not going to condemn you eternally. You're safe. It's okay there. Of course, they might threaten you with expulsion, and if this is the case, you might be better. What serves you? What serves your highest good? What serves everyone? Would it serve you to stop serving some kind of group so blindly? If it's God's pleasure to give you the kingdom, who are you to refuse and cut down on your livingness, your aliveness? Is religion keeping you? Is dogma keeping you from living your life fully and freely, from breathing air freely? Think about what you have to do in order to be free. Number 17, does my group try and reduce the infinite to the finite by putting restrictions, definitions, rules, boxes around God, and then around me? Does the church try to make God a finite being by trying to totally define God, God's reactions, God's plan, God's ideas? Have you ever thought about the meaning of the word infinite? It's bigger than anything you can ever describe or know. We are finite. Could you completely know the infinite? If we are finite, can we know the infinite? Can we speak for God completely, assured that we know it all? I don't think so. I know I can't. I certainly know very little. And the longer I live and the more I study, the more I realize I know very little. And yet I have intelligence. I have part of the mind of God within me that keeps me pursuing and pursuing more and more knowledge. At best, folks, we're channels of God's love and God's light. And when we're out of harmony, we're into fear, and we have a lot of unhealed issues. We distort what we think is the voice of God. We fall prey to other people. And, oh, heavens, they surely know more than we do. Most of us are doing the best we can, and some of us, of what we do, is very ignorant. Does it really work for us to allow others and their viewpoints to imprison us? Let's break out of the boxes that we've climbed into and expand and move in the direction of attunement with God. At-one-ment with God. That's what atonement is. At-one-ment with God. God itself and wholeness. Number 18, does my group try to control my thinking, my behavior, my money, my life in any significant way? What could or would they do to you if you went against them? What could or would they threaten to do? What could or would they threaten on God's behalf? What do they ask of you? Is it reasonable? Do they ask you to tithe, give 10%? Or do they tell you to give them all that you have? Now, going into tithing, I have nothing against it. I have nothing against seeding money, giving money to wherever you get your spiritual food. But when they ask you to give it all, I think about that quite a bit. Do they ask you to volunteer, or do they ask you to move in? Do they check in with you to find out what you want and what, or all of that? Or do they tell you what you want? That's a good question. Do they tell you what you really want? And what you really want is usually what they want. Does this church use hypnotic techniques? Generally speaking, you can, as Rick, I sure wish Rick was here tonight, because you can identify behaviors, words, and teachings that are panic-oriented and that are intended to scare you or that misdirect your attention so that these leaders can slip suggestions into your mind. And oftentimes they do these long processes, the sing-alongs of the same thing over and over and over, and end up with people swaying and moving with their eyes glazed over or in a frenzy. Do they keep you for hours until you're so fatigued that you'll agree to anything? Well, let me tell you. if you're entangled in a cult, you can get free. You really can. Is your life about being put into a trance or about waking up? Are you willing to stop giving these people permission to hypnotize you? It is a good thing for you to turn your subconscious mind over to others to program however they want. Think about it. Think. This is a crucial idea and a turning point when we awaken to the realization that we have been put to sleep. And furthermore, we don't have to be asleep. We can awaken. We can take charge of our own consciousness and step into the freedom of God's light and love. Number 20. Have I ever suspected that they were not telling me the truth, but were trying to control me? And so many people, they talk about how they sat in some type of religious meeting or another, and suddenly they started waking up. And they knew what was being said was not the truth. Some people, they feared they were going crazy because everyone else seemed to believe the stuff that was said and done. Some have walked out and began to search for a better way. God is within you and me. And you yourself, without any help from anyone else, can hear the voice of God. It's in us continually. It's softly urging us to freedom and awakening. I believe myself that everyone, even the most entranced by fundamentalism and dogma, have moments of doubt. That next moment of doubt could be your doorway out of a trance. This moment could be the moment for you. Now that you know there's another way and not everyone believes as the dogmatists believe, you can walk out of any spiritual and mental prison into the light of a new day. It's possible. And ladies and gentlemen, this week, time has run out. And I promise next week that my partner Rick will be on, and he's going to be discussing hypnosis and religion. And we're going to carry this through, and we're going to have steps on how to awaken yourself from this. Steps, actual, concrete steps to take that you don't have to go to a deprogrammer in most cases, and definite steps to take to deprogram yourself. And the first step is to recognize that God loves you. And it's a mighty big God with a lot of love. And it doesn't include your suffering, your denial, your misery. These are not things of God. For God is love. And he who abides in love abides in God and God in him. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to wish you good night and invite you to join us again next week when my partner is here, and it's so much easier to have a wonderful partner with you. So I bid you all good night, farewell, and say those prayers and find that freedom and know that God loves you. Good night and farewell. We'll talk with you next week.